Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and our road trip today takes us to some familiar places in central Wisconsin, but places that look different and sound different as we look at them through the mist of time. For today on Route 51, we're going back to a Wisconsin that existed before the first boot print on our soil, a Wisconsin of the ancient pinery and an ancient tribal language that described the rivers, lakes, streams, and settlements of our land. We will hear those names spoken today by one of the few people alive who still speaks the language, the ancient language of the Menominee clans. Mike Hoffman has worked for 30 years on a project known as the Menominee Place Names Map, a synthesis of the ancient language with modern GPS technology. The map is now on display at the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History. Also here in our studio, museum director and archaeologist Ray Reeser, who worked with Mr. Hoffman on the map in the context of a greater look at Menominee tribal culture. Our goal today is to discover how that ancient culture has influenced how we live and how we talk today in north central Wisconsin, what we've kept and what we've lost over the years. And as always, we invite you to join the conversation. Our phone lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to get in line, the lines are wide open right now. And gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning.
And we have been listening in that introduction to a traditional Menominee lullaby. According to the website, it was recorded by ethnomusicologist Francis Densmore back in the 1920s, and it appears on the website. And I invite all of you to go online as you're listening to the show and follow along at uwsp.edu/museum/Menominee clans. It's uwsp.edu/museum/Menominee clans. Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about the lullaby that we just listened to?
That lullaby was recorded by Francis Densmore back in the early part of the century. And when it was recorded, it was written down in classical music. Unfortunately, we couldn't find anyone who could read music. It was a pretty hard task, and so one day I was talking with my father-in-law, Robert Messner, an Oneida tribal elder, who is a classically trained musician, and I said, "Bob, do you think possibly you could play this music?" And he said, "No problem." He said, "I'll transpose it, and it'll be a piece of cake."
So we were listening to his rendition of that.
Yes.
Ray, this is part of a really extensive look at the Menominee tribe, their clans, all at the Museum of Natural History. Tell us a little bit about the museum.
The museum was started in about 1968 by a number of professors, mainly biology professors, and one of the archaeology professors, John Moore, at UWSP. And the museum was really created to exhibit some of the current scientific research going on. The museum has grown and changed quite a lot since 1968. At the moment, we have over 400,000 natural history specimens on display. But really, one of the highlights of our exhibits is what's known as the Menominee Clan Story Display. This particular display is a collection of carvings carved by traditional Menominee artist and elder James Frechette over a period of about 10 or 15 years.
And he's no longer with us today.
That's correct. He's deceased. And I'll let Mike talk a bit about the meaning of these clan figures.
The Menominee clans were originated in the beginning of time. We have the genesis, which is the Great Lake Color Bear speaking up to in the heavens to the Great Golden Eagle.
That's part of your creation story.
Yes, that is the beginning of the creation story. The Golden Eagle represents the Thunderers, and the Great Lake Color Bear represents the underground beings or the earth people. And when the Great Lake Color Bear emerged from the earth He was lonely, and he asked the Creator if he could change his form. And the Creator allowed that, and he changed into the first Menominee. And as he traveled along, he saw the golden eagle flying above, and he asked the golden eagle to descend down and join him. And they started the Menominee clans, and as they went along, they picked up the wolf and the moose and the crane, and those became the five clans, the major clans.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is going a little bit out of the order that I wanted to do for this radio show, but you have on the website the creation story as narrated by James Frechette in English, and you also have your own translation, speaking in the original Menominee language, Mike?
Yes.
Let's listen to that right now. I put both of those together for the purposes of the radio show. This is the Menominee tribal creation story, and you're going to hear Mike Hoffman, who's with us today, speaking in the ancient Menominee language, and James Frechette, who is responsible for much of the Menominee clans exhibit at the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History, narrating in English.
When grandfather made the earth, he also made the sun and the stars. He then created the many spirit beings and gave them the form of animals and birds. The animals were the underground beings. The principal underground being is the great silver-white bear. The birds, mostly eagles and hawks, are the thunderers, the sky dwellers. The principal thunder is the invisible thunder and is represented by the golden eagle symbol. Grandmother, the earth, gave birth to a daughter, the moon. The daughter gave birth to twins. One of the twins grew to become a man. Grandfather gave him many powers so that he could complete the building of the world. He built the hills and the mountains. He made the forests, the lakes, and the rivers. When the building was completed and before there were people on earth, at the place where the village river meets the bay in spite of itself, a great light-colored bear emerged from underground and started traveling up the river. As he traveled, he spoke to Grandfather. When Grandfather saw that the bear was still an animal, he determined to allow the bear to change his form. The bear was pleased at what Grandfather was going to grant him. So Grandfather changed him into a man, and he became the first Menominee.
That's James Frechette, the late James Frechette, who is responsible for much of the Menominee clans exhibit at the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History, speaking in English, the Menominee creation or origin story, and speaking the ancient language with us today, one of the few people who can still speak that language, Mike Hoffman. Mike, as you were saying, the story tells of the bear meeting a golden eagle, a wolf, a crane, and a moose, which all changed into men. Tell us about that and how that relates to the clan structure of the Menominee tribe.
Well, as opposed to the dominant culture, Menominee didn't separate themselves from the earth. We didn't separate ourselves from the beings that the Creator put here. We call them our brothers, and we live with the earth, not off the earth like a parasite.
So each of these figures, and again we're talking about a bear, a golden eagle, a wolf, a crane, and a moose. There are five of them. They correspond to the five clans of the Menominee tribe.
Yes, that's true.
And the story goes on to tell about the brothers meeting Beaver Woman. Tell about that.
Yes, and Makuki, the Beaver Woman, had been swimming upstream, and they met her, and they adopted her also, but as a brother.
As a brother. So what, according to this origin or creation story, what's the place of women and men in the Menominee culture as understood by this story? What are the relationships between the men of the tribe, the women of the tribe, and how does that all fit into this origin story and the clan structure? And I know that's a huge question to ask you.
Yes, it is. different roles were expected of people, just as in the dominant culture, the intensive hard labor and the hunting and things of this nature were mainly male. And a lot of the things like gathering and cooking and taking care of utensils and everything were done by the females.
And this origin story, did it tell of the Menominee moving to Wisconsin from other areas, from other territories?
Con.
It did not.
That means no. No.
And why is that?
Well, because we say we've always been here. And people say, well, that's ridiculous. How could you come from a bear? And I said, well, you tell that to the Creator. They talk about the Creator reaching down and scooping up a handful of dirt and breathing into it, and it became man. Tell me the Creator couldn't change a bear into a man?
In the biblical Genesis story.
Yes.
And again, the story does not have the Menominee people moving to Wisconsin from other territories because you've always lived in Wisconsin.
Yes, that's right. My friend and colleague here, Ray Reeser, director of the Museum of Natural History at UWSB, and a great archaeologist in his right, can testify to some of these words that we use in the Menominee language going back for thousands and thousands of years. Take, for instance, Mechinamak, the great fish or the whale, Atah, the caribou, or Omaskos, the elk. These things don't exist here right now in the area we're talking about, but they did at one time. And why would we have names for these things if we wouldn't have been here in the beginning?
Ray, you're a geoarchaeologist and a paleoanthropologist. You're the former director of the Central Wisconsin Archaeology Center. Why don't you kind of riff on what Mike just said and how important the Menominee culture has been to everything that followed in Wisconsin?
Yeah, absolutely, Glenn. I mean, Menominee origin stories and passed down oral histories are really fascinating, as are most indigenous origin stories. It used to be thought that much of traditional knowledge for existing peoples had been lost, partly to do with the fact that as Europeans came in, culture really changed. For one, a really sad aspect of the whole Native American experience was that somewhere between 90% and 95% of Native Americans died from disease before Europeans even set foot on the continent. So by the time the French and early explorers got to Wisconsin, basically the Native American population was fairly decimated. But a lot of traditional knowledge was lost, but a lot of traditional knowledge was also retained. And in the case of the Menominees, like Mike said, they have a name for essentially whales. And we know from some scant evidence, there isn't a lot of evidence, but in the late Pleistocene, maybe about 12, 15,000 years ago, there were whales in the Great Lakes, and we occasionally see...
Really?
Yeah, we occasionally see skeletal remnants of vertebrae or a piece of a jaw. And also, as Mike said, the Menominee talk, their clan system and their origin stories talk about caribou being in the state, moose being in the state, elk being in the state. Well, at the time of when Europeans got here, there was still a scattering of elk. Moose were rare as they are today, and caribou were non-existent. So all of those origin stories that talk about those animals being in the landscape, and additionally, Mike has mentioned that there's mention in Menominee origin stories about a time when the land was really covered with snow and ice. Well, we're looking back at least 10,000 years. I mean, the last glacial advance in the very northern part of the state was about 10,000 years ago. And we have, there's precedence for that. In the western U.S., there's a volcanic eruption called Mount Mazama.
Uh-huh.
That volcano erupted 7,000 years ago. Native American tribes in their origin stories still today in that area talk about that eruption.
Mike, this is all passed on verbally from one generation to the next because the Menominee language until the white man came was never written down.
That's true. Song and legend played a big role in our education. Back before the white man came here to the continent, young people stood in front of certain elders in the lodge, especially in the wintertime, and listened to legends and listened to different stories and learned that way. And then they were expected to repeat these back, word for word, and song in different ceremonies told tribal history.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is something that the elders of the tribe did, and it provided a record that according to Ray anyway, goes back all the way to the last ice age, which is, you know, pretty phenomenal.
Yes.
Now, when did the Menominee language actually get written down? Because it is written down now with traditional English characters.
Well, when the first explorers came on shore, they wanted to have all kinds of trade and take things back to Europe. Well, they figured the only way they could ever accomplish that was to be able to converse with the native population. So the early explorers and the Jesuits, of course, wanted to convert our souls and convert some of our commerce into their monetary gain, thought a good way to do this would be to create a catechism. And they did that, and they wrote down some other religious things and started a form of written language.
And you say that you write on the website for the museum that the Menominee language is one of the most published languages today, correct?
Yes, we were very fortunate in a sense to have several caring individuals write down things. We had some anthropologists come who did a real good job interviewing people and writing things down. And
Well, if it's one of the most published languages today, why are you one of just a handful of people who speak it? Hardly anybody speaks the language. Some would say it's dying.
Well, we're overwhelmed today. Right? When you drive down the street, you don't see any signs in Menominee. You don't hear Menominee on the radio, on the television. It's not taught in the general schools out here. And it was a very, very difficult language to speak. Well, that's why when we had World War II, the code talkers, Native American code talkers, were able to transmit messages that the Germans and the Japanese could not decode. And we had two Menominee code talkers. One man's name was Dave Machapetal, David Big Flyer.
Uh-huh.
And they would use code along with the language, and the Japanese and the Germans said it sounds like they're talking underwater. They couldn't understand.
So the language is very sophisticated, very complex.
Yes, very complex.
How did you learn it?
I was very fortunate. A couple relatives always talked underground, you know, because there was a time when it wasn't allowed to be spoken. It was against the rules to speak in school, in the boarding schools, and some people just spoke at home and kept underground. And I was real fortunate to be able to get next to these people and learn a little bit. As time went on, I kept learning more, and they'd connect me up with other people. And
you're a Menominee and an Ottawa descendant.
Yes.
Did you grow up on the reservation?
No, I grew up in Nakusa. Not all Menominees live on the reservation. That's a misconception. There's a lot of Native people that don't live on reservations.
So you didn't have an opportunity, really, to speak the language except through your contact with certain elders?
Yes, that's true.
You were given your Menominee name. You write by a woman who helped teach you the language. Tell us about that woman and tell us about your name.
Well, her name was Lillian Wapichick Nelson. That was her check cashing name, as she referred to it.
Uh-huh.
Her real name was Watsishuwan. And Watsishuwan was what was on the roll. She was one of the last full-blooded Menominees alive. And she was a good friend of my Aunt Mary Bug and my cousin Sonny's mother. So things just fell in place, and I wound up working with her. She taught language in Neopet at the little language building that used to be there. And she had mercy on me and took me on as a student, and we worked together real well.
And she gave you a name. What is your Menominee name?
Chiquanaquit. And it means the meteor cloud that rushes in with a noise and makes it clear.
Meteor cloud that rushes in with a noise and makes it clear.
Yes, and she told me that was one of the family names, and because I was of the Golden Eagle clan, that was an appropriate name for me.
And this all leads to your desire to keep a record of the ancient Menominee language, and particularly the place names in north central Wisconsin, the original Menominee territory, which led right to the Menominee place names map.
That's right, Glenn. Mike had come to me about 5 or 6 years ago and explained that he was interested in doing a Menominee place names map because he had done, as you mentioned earlier, nearly 30 years of research looking through historic records, talking to elders, verifying place names, making sure he had the pronunciation correct, trying to tease out the meaning of some of the really old, archaic names. And Mike came to me and said, I'd really like to produce a map with these names on it, and I'd like to produce it in Menominee. And when we first started talking, I said, Mike, this is a huge project. I'm not sure I can take it on right now. But about a year and a half ago, I had a wonderful older non-traditional student, Joe Martell, come into the museum looking for an internship project. And he wanted to do a mapping project, and I had several in mind. But I said, I have this really incredible project looking at mapping Menominee place names from about the time of European contact or before, and producing a map that's entirely in Menominee to give people a sense of where the state of Wisconsin came from, mm-hmm. what the traditional names were. And we were extremely lucky and fortunate to have support, and we dove into it full-time about a year ago, and we produced the map within the last few months.
And it's on display right now at the museum. And again, if you who are listening, you folks out there in radio land, if you'd like to see this map, or at least see a graphic of the original place names and hear how they're pronounced, here's the website, uwsp.edu/museum/Menominee clans. Again, that's uwsp.edu/museum/Menominee clans. Let's just run a few of them. Mike Hoffman, the original Menominee name for Wisconsin.
Well, there's been several attempts by people to claim it, and it's a really complicated thing. But I do know this. The Menominee, we had our own special way of saying it, and it was Weshkoshik.
Sounds like Wisconsin.
Yes, something close to it.
And what does that translate to in Menominee?
A good place to live. When we say the word Weshkiwat, it is good, and Wishki, he is good. Weshkoshik, it is a good place. That name, I ran by several of the elders, and it came from Merslin Sanapa, who was a old Menominee language teacher back ways. Her son is still alive today, and when I asked him, I said, is this what your mother said? And he said, yes, Weshkoshik. And that's the kind of research
that you did for this Menominee place names map. You went to a lot of original source material, a lot of things that had been written down, but you also talked to people.
Yes.
people who still remembered the ancient language and the way it was spoken.
Yes. If you go to the internet, you'll come away with your head spinning.
Mike, hold that thought. Mike Hoffman, he's a Native American researcher, and Ray Reeser of the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History. They've got an incredible exhibit on the Menominee clans and a new addition to that exhibit, the Menominee Place Names Map, showing the places in Wisconsin and how they got their names. Some of them we still have today. Some of them, the original Menominee names are no longer in use. We're going to go through a number of those when we come back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Peninsula Players, Ganchert Nursery, and Marshfield Clinic, proud supporters of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, welcoming the return of Birds in Art. See 125 all-new Birds in Art works now through November 10th, along with 5 exhibitions from the museum's collection. More at lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. Our subject today, the influence of Menominee tribal culture on the way we speak in central Wisconsin, specifically some of the place names, the names of villages, cities, settlements, lakes, rivers that many of us grew up with, and some of the original names that are no longer part of the lexicon. We've got Mike Hoffman, who put together the Menominee Place Names Map, and Ray Reeser, who's the director of the Museum of Natural History at UW Stevens Point, where that map is on display. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That number again is 1-800-780-9742. And Mike, let's go through some of these names on the list, and I want to mention too that we have a link to the museum's Menominee Clans exhibit on our Route 51 Facebook page if you would like to follow along. Mike, the original name for Peshtigo.
Peshtigo. It's an archaic word. The true meaning, it was said, was lost. But we do know it had something to do with deer, possibly the place of deer. A Passos is a deer. Apashtiko is what I was told, and that's what I put down. But behind every questionable old word that we weren't really sure of, we have the word archaic.
Sauk County.
A Sauk, and it means he's a Sauk Indian.
And it also means yellow earth, according
yes,
to your definition.
Yes, yellow earth.
How about Portage?
See,
the community of Portage?
Yeah. Kakekomanakekne, at a shortcut, Portage.
So the name sounds nothing like the name Portage, but the definition is the same today.
Yes.
Ray, it's fascinating to see the correlation between the old names. Some of them sound like the names that we use today. Others are the definition of the names that we use today in English.
It's really amazing, especially as we started to pull the map together to see how much of that was the case. Again, there are thousands of Native American names, not just Menominee, but all kinds of Native American names across the state. But it was really impressive for me to see how many Menominee words are still in common usage.
Let's go to another one, Mike Hoffman. Kenosha.
Kenisi. And it means a northern pike.
All right, something many of us have familiarity with.
And if you go to that area down there, and you'll see there's the Pike River, and there was even a tavern way, way back they called the Pike Tavern.
Kishina.
Kishitna. The
swift flying, according
to... Yes, the dominant culture somewhat changed the name. They couldn't say it. And today it's been accepted by the family as Kishina, but in the old way as Kishitna. It means he flies fast. like wings beating fast and moving forward fastly.
Now, is it true that the Menominee language, there are some pronunciations and some words, some vowels, some consonants that we just have no correlation for in English?
Yes, that's true.
Well, that makes things a little bit iffy when it comes to translating.
Yes, it does. We tend to think a little different than the dominant culture about a lot of things. Like I mentioned, I'll just mention this, a rock, it's animate. But to the dominant culture, it's inanimate. We consider it part of Mother Earth.
To you, a rock or a stone is living.
Yes, it's considered animate.
Let's move on to another place name, Kewanee.
Kewanee, that's another archaic word, and is a species of duck.
Mackinac or Mackinac, Michigan?
Mackinac, Manassas. And Mackinac is a turtle, and Manassas is an island.
So Mackinac Island looks like a turtle, and the original name obviously has a Menominee background to it.
My sixth-generation great-grandfather, Charles Michael DeLange Lade, who was Ottawa in French, was actually born on Mackinac, Manassas.
Milwaukee.
Manawa. And it means something unfortunate will happen there.
Prophetic.
Well, prophetic if you're Native American, you know, and you saw all of your territory, all of your land taken over by the European settlers, and your reservation now is where?
The reservation is all of Menominee County.
All of Menominee County at the head of the Wolf River, but yes. Your original territory was so much bigger than that.
Oh, yes, yes. There were no lines in the sand. We lived basically in the whole part of the state that's more of the southern, eastern part of the state.
Now, the Menominee tribe is one of just several in Wisconsin today, but we understand that it is indigenous in the sense that you didn't come here from somewhere else. The Menominee people have been here forever.
You tell the truth.
And it's interesting, Glenn, of the 11 recognized nations in the state, the two with probably the greatest claim to antiquity based on the archaeological evidence and linguistic evidence are the Ho-Chunk Nation and the Menominee Nation.
So the Ho-Chunk were here basically since the dawn of time, or since recorded history
sure.
In the sense of the stories?
Before recorded history, and as you go back and examine the archaeological record, it gets more and more difficult to determine exactly who those people are. But there are clues, especially in the pottery types, the ceramic, mm-hmm. and in some of the rock art, that we certainly know the Ho-Chunk were here at least 1,000 years, perhaps a bit longer.
And Mike Hoffman, how similar is the Ho-Chunk language to the Menominee language?
Night and day.
Explain that to me.
The Ho-Chunk language is of Siouan language family, and the Menominee language is of the Algonquin language family. The Ho-Chunk got saddled with that name Winnebago from the Algonquin people, and mainly from Menominee. When we were asked, well, who was it was living there? We said, Winnipeko Mamachitawak. And Winnipeko means the greenish, dirty water. Like Lake Winnebago, that whole shallow region there, and the part of the year that when it's real stagnant and warm, it gets kind of smelly and dirty.
So the name Winnebago means green, smelly water.
Yes, but it was not
derogatory. And somehow you ended up... But you ended up saddling, or the Ho-Chunk got saddled with the Winnebago name because
yes.
of the Menominee.
Yes, we said Winnipeko, but the interpreters happen to be Anishinaabeg or Chippewa, and they have B's instead of P's and G's instead of K's, so they translate as Winnebago.
All right.
It wasn't derogatory, though, toward those people. They were our allies and friends. And it just described the area that they came from.
Now, the Ho-Chunk are part of the Sioux family
yes.
of languages, and you're part of the Algonquin family.
Yes.
Can Ho-Chunk people understand Menominee people, and can Menominee people understand Ho-Chunk people?
Not at all.
Not at all. It's like...
Night and day.
It's like somebody who's European trying to understand somebody speaking Chinese.
Yes.
Wow. Does your place names map contain any Ho-Chunk names?
No. I state this on my website there. If you want to know Ho-Chunk names, I suggest that you contact Ho-Chunk Preservation Office, and they'll possibly help you out.
Well, let's go through some of the other names on the Menominee place names map.
If I can here, yes.
The Mississippi River.
Massissippi. And Sepe is a river. And Massissippi means it's like spreading out, hugely spreading out.
So a big spreading river.
Yes.
Which describes what the Mississippi River is, and the original name sounds very much like Mississippi.
Yes.
Let's move on to the Wolf River.
Mahua Sepe. And Mahua is a wolf.
So here's another situation, Ray, where the name in Menominee doesn't sound at all like the current name in English, but it means the same thing.
Absolutely. So the meaning is depicted in English, obviously. And many indigenous names, including Menominee names, are descriptive or are tied to an event or a story for that particular area.
Menominee, Michigan.
Omahnamene. And it means the people of the good grain. And that wasn't what we called ourselves. We said, Kais Mamachatawak. That's how we described ourselves back before contact. Others gave us the name Menominee or Omatnamane, which means people of the good grain or people of the wild oats.
Mosinee.
Mosapne. And this came down to, I usually don't reveal all my sources, but this came down to me from Don Perrot. Who was a Menominee judge, and back in the beginning of settlement here, people were moving across the state trying to avoid being put on a reservation, and they had become sick with consumption, they called it back then. And they were traveling through the area of Big Bull Falls there, or Mosapne, Mosinee, and some real decent folks had heard that they were coming through and that they had illness. So they loaded a wagon with supplies, and they pulled up to them and said, here, take these supplies, this food and blankets and everything, but whatever you do, do not come into town. They'll shoot you.
Wow.
And so that Mosapne, he fares alone there.
He dwells alone.
Yes.
Lake Michigan.
Nanowia Kachikome. Nanuya means in the middle, and Kachikome, it means a large body of water, and Kachikome means at it, in it, by it. There's a locative on the end.
So it's a large body of water in the middle, like Lake Michigan
yes.
is in the middle of the Great Lakes.
Yes.
Lake Superior.
Ochikashia Kachikome, and Ochikashia means in the north.
Mike Hoffman, he's a Native American historian, one of the few people alive who speaks the ancient Menominee language. Ray Reeser, the director of the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History. The Menominee Place Names Map is part of a larger exhibit on the Menominee clans and their influence on the natural history of central Wisconsin. It's our subject on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, 1-800-780-9742, if you'd like to join the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We are talking to Mike Hoffman, a tribal historian, and Ray Reeser, the director of the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History, about the Menominee Clan story, an exhibit at the museum, and specifically the Menominee Place Names Map, which details how the names of rivers and streams and lakes and early villages and cities got their names in Menominee, many of those names still with us today. And right during the break, we were talking about Gitche-Gumee, the famous line from the Longfellow poem about Lake Superior.
Absolutely. So earlier, Mike had mentioned, Mike, I should have you pronounce it, the name for Great Lake.
Gitche-Gumee.
So Gitche-Gumee. Gitche-Gumee, which Longfellow used, is really a derivation or a very similar word spoken in Chippewa for great lakes or a very large lake.
It means big water is what it means. Tommy Ketchikome gave me that, and that family, Ketchikome family, they're still around.
Part of the daunting task for Mike was on some of the names that have been anglicized or slightly tweaked, either because the earlier interpreters were hearing things and filtering them through their English or French language. Mike had to sort of work backwards and take place names and try and see if he could decipher and figure out what they originally meant in Menominee. Now, some of them, that was a pretty easy task. Some of them were a bit more difficult.
Mike, you compare it to the childhood game of telegraph, in which one person says one thing to another person who says something to another person who says something to another person. By the time you get done, it's a completely different thing that they're saying. And some of these names were passed on to the French and then to the English and so on.
Yes, and many languages, if you take the Polish language, for instance, they emit certain sounds. They emit the TH sound in the language. And I know some Polish people who have been living here their entire life, but they don't say them, they say dem. And it's the same. So when they heard things, they wrote it down how they would say it. And that was one of the problems.
When you say, we hear somebody saying dem, it's not an indication of ignorance or the fact that they don't know how to speak. They're simply using a Polish or an Eastern European accent.
Yes, exactly.
Which doesn't have the TH sound in it. Stevens Point.
Paskipakinen. It means a point of land that juts out into the water. And Ray can talk about that point of land. When they drew the river down here several years ago, there it was.
So when rivers are drawn down in Wisconsin, there's a mandatory archaeological survey. In this case, UW La Crosse came in, the Mississippi Valley Archaeology Center, and surveyed the river, and UWSP assisted. But we were able to relocate that point of land. It's kind of a cross and a bit north of Buchold Park. Currently, it's underwater, but that's the exact location for what later became named Stevens Point after George Stevens. But long before George Stevens showed up, the Menominee place name was there.
Green Bay, the Menominee name for Green Bay.
Buchiket.
Which means?
It means kind of smelly. actually, kind of, well, I don't know if I should say this on air, but kind of like passing gas. the smell of the water there was not really pleasant.
And if you're from Chicago and you think you've got something over the people of Green Bay, give us the Menominee name for Chicago.
Sakako.
Which means?
Sakak is a skunk. Sakako, place of the skunk.
Place of skunks.
Yes.
They're probably not pleasing a lot of people here today.
How about Wapaka?
That's one of my favorites. As you go down Highway 10, you'll see the Wapaka River, the Tomorrow River, and the Crystal River, which are, in fact, the same river as they cross the highway, winding back and forth. And if you go on the Internet, you'll see just a ton of name or of meanings and who possibly did it. But for a fact, a man named Niatawapame, seen first, or most conspicuous, was the band leader at the Wapakachena Lakes. And when he was interviewed, he said the name was Wapaka, and it means place of tomorrow, where it is seen clearly.
And we still have the Crystal River and the Tomorrow River and the Wapaka River.
Yes.
Which all mean the same thing in the ancient language.
Yes. But there are people today who insist there was a Chief Wapaka, and no man, when you talk to any credible Menominee historian, they'll say, who?
Wapaka County has some large bronze plaques that probably need to be replaced.
How about Wausau? We're originating in Wausau for this radio show.
What now? It is a far place.
A faraway place.
Yes.
Mike Hoffman, tribal elder who has put together the Menominee Place Names Map at the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History. We have a Facebook question. What is being done, Mike, to preserve the Menominee language? And this, of course, is part of that effort.
Yes. Oh, there's a real push right now. And I'm so proud of a couple of people in our tribe who are just going at it full tilt. Last night, I traveled over to Keshena to the College of Menominee Nation, and one of my relatives, Ron Korn Jr., Mootsakwa is his name, Clear Sky. He's a fluent speaker. He also trained under Watsajiwon Grandma Lillian. And he's holding classes that are unprecedented. He's getting into the linguistics, and things are taking off.
How do you react when people say, you Indians should get over it? You lost the Indian Wars. You're part of America now. You should just lose your identity as a people and become like everyone else.
Well, that's a rough question to answer, because why would we endeavor to change ourselves from what the Creator made us? We have a different way of looking at the earth than a lot of people in the dominant culture. You got this whack 'em and stack 'em trophy hunting crowd, and these catch and release fishermen guys who go out there and torture fish. We leave them alone until we're ready to eat them, and then we harvest them, and we release them into Crisco Bay.
Crisco Bay, huh? Catch and release into the grease, as
right.
My friend Joe Booker said. How is that tension between the two cultures playing out in current politics? You've got the fight over the Pinoki mine. You've got the fight over the wolf hunt. Are the tribes united, even as disparate as they are?
Oh, yes. When it comes to earthly things, we're pretty much all the same mindset.
What do you think other Americans can learn from the Menominee and learn from other Native Americans? What can we learn from you?
Well, we had a way of treating the earth that didn't destroy it. Ray can testify to this. When you go to old dump sites, old Indian dump sites, you don't find plastic. You don't find harmful chemicals. I think you might find some stone implements, some clay shards. But we left things pretty much pristine.
That's exactly right. Glenn, Native Americans, it's not that Native Americans didn't have a profound effect on the landscape, but in some ways it was a different scale, and indigenous perspectives about land and resources are much different. As Mike happened to mention earlier about rocks, the entire landscape is animate. It's alive for them, and they're just one part of that large living ecosystem.
Those of us who are Americans who aren't Native Americans, can we learn from you about the way you treat the land and the respect you have for the environment and for nature?
Positively. A little more recycling, a lot less raping of the land would go a long ways.
We want to thank today's guests, Ray Reeser, the director of the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History, and Mike Hoffman, tribal researcher and creator of the Menominee Place Names Map, on display now at the museum. And you can find out more about the map and the story of the Menominee clans at uwsp.edu www.route51.org/museum/Menominee Clans. We've got a link on our Route 51 website. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by the Menominee Tribe, Robert Messner, and Peter Phippen. Next week on Route 51, we welcome Philip Jenkins, author of Laying Down the Sword. He is the guest speaker for the James Veninga Lecture on Religion and Politics, which will be held next Thursday evening at the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater. A reminder to follow us on Facebook, and you can hear Route 51 rebroadcast every Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.